Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to the Ranks FC podcast. This is your favourite football podcast, back for another week. My name is Jack Collins, and I will be your host today. And joining me is our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. Just a two-man job today. Sam continues to recover from his illness. Sick Note Anderton is back in business for another week.
He is called Sick Note now. We've decided that on the Patreon. If you're not on the Patreon, that's the kind of content you are missing out on, us giving Sam nicknames like that. But it's fine, mate. It's fine. You and Sam did about 3 weeks without me, so we can go on without him.
Yeah, you're missing out on the Antonio content over on Patreon. And today we're going to be talking about Antonio Conte, who is the new Spurs manager. We're going to be talking with Nathan Clark of the Extra Inch podcast about what five things Conte needs to do in his time as Spurs boss in order to turn the club around after a couple of, let's say, dud managerial appointments, shall we? Let's put it that way. And before we get on to all of that, though, we're going to start, as usual, with things we love. And Dean, you're going to kick us off this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing I love at the moment is West Ham, to be honest. I never thought I would say that. Not really in my DNA to love much about West Ham, but they are absolutely flying in the Premier League, in Europe, and in the Carabao Cup. And David Moyes needs his moment in the sun for this, because he is doing an unbelievable job. West Ham, you know, they don't get a lot of airtime on the big stations, whether it's radio, TV, podcasts, websites, whatever. They're rarely the lead item, but they need to start getting that respect. And that's why they're getting their little moment here on Ranks. He's reminding us all really why Man United appointed him all those years back and the potential that he has to actually manage and coach a team. So this is a proper team West Ham have now. They are utilising their strengths individually, but playing as a unit and reaping the benefits of that. Other clubs that have been unstable, Man United, Arsenal, Tottenham, now have to hope, really, that the lack of depth at West Ham means that they lose some momentum. Because at the moment, West Ham are looking pretty strong to become a Champions League contender in terms of finishing fourth. Now, it's still a stretch. There's still a long way to go this season. And it is that one thing about the depth pool that makes you think they won't quite do it. But David Moyes has got so much right in the past 18 months that I wouldn't put it past him absolutely nailing this. It'll be interesting to see how they approach the second half of the season, especially if this European run continues. But can they get a trophy in the bag? Obviously, they've beaten Man City on penalties. Declan Rice, one of the best players in the Premier League. Mikel Antonio, absolutely transformed over the past couple of years. They're playing some great football. And when they don't play great football, they've got a grit and determination and togetherness that is unlike almost every other team in the English top flight. So if you're not watching West Ham, start to watch them. If you thought David Moyes was a dud, you're wrong. He is legit. and he deserves.
He's a stud, mate. He's a stud.
David Moyes is a stud.
There you go. He's been remarkable, hasn't he? This second term at West Ham has been, well, I mean, nothing short of incredible. I mean, look, and I think maybe the great thing about this, and the reason that I would join you on the things we love train here, because I also love him, what West Ham are doing at the moment, is that I think a lot of West Ham fans thought they might have missed the nadir of all of this, right?
Yeah.
Last year, not being able to get into the stadium, not being able to enjoy it in its full capacity because it was all behind closed doors. This season, having to compete on a couple of fronts, obviously being in the Europa League, in the Cups, and then trying to maintain a league form on top of that with a squad that a lot of people said was too small to be able to do that. I think there was a little bit of skepticism over whether West Ham could repeat what they were doing, and yet they are steaming onwards. And it's so enjoyable to watch. And look, they're top of their Europa League group. They've won 3 from 3. They look pretty much set to qualify for the knockout stages. They've just knocked Man City out of the Carabao Cup, albeit on penalties, but that was a Man City team that hadn't lost in this competition for pretty much 5 years. And they're fourth in the Premier League. These are heady days if you're a West Ham fan. They haven't even got to the FA Cup yet, which is historically their best competition.
Yeah, mate. They are loving it. They really are. Their fan base are lapping up every single moment of this. Yeah, literally, this is a once-in-a-lifetime moment, potentially, and they have to just ride this train for as long as they can. And we know they'll have to use, you know, 13, 14 players and hope that they all stay fit. They'll just have to play them until they collapse because they're doing so well. Like somehow they are churning out the same team again and again. And at the moment, they're maintaining a level. Obviously, they'll at some point suffer a couple of setbacks and it'll all be about how they bounce back from that. But because of what we've seen from Moyes so far and his staff around him in helping this team recover from anything like that, I've got faith in them. And until I see otherwise, I'm saying that West Ham have got a good chance of being in that conversation at the end of the season for certainly European football game, potentially Champions League football.
Yeah, it's glorious. It's a glorious time to be a West Ham fan. So enjoy it, Hammers, while you can. Enjoy it. I'm going to take us to Italy in shock news. And the news will shock nobody. I want to talk about Gio Simeone, who is second now in the Capocannoniere Stakes, and with 8 goals, it's just been a remarkable turnaround. Obviously, the first 3 games of the season, Hellas Verona had Eusebio Di Francesco in charge. They got rid of him after 2 losses and a draw, which a lot of people thought was a bit harsh, considering one of the losses was to Inter. But they got rid of him, and they brought in Igor Tudor. And since then, they have been absolutely ludicrously fun. And leading the way is Gio Simeone. Now, in this time, since he's taken over, they've had 8 games. They've scored 21 goals and 8 of them have been Simeone. And on top of that, he's got 3 assists as well. So he is now responsible, should we say, for over 50% of Hellas' goals in that time. I think there's always chat around Gio Simeone about the fact that people are like, oh, is he only there because his dad was good at football and his dad's a good manager, et cetera, et cetera. And it's really harsh. And I know he gets a lot of criticism from kind of various aspects, including from Sam, who's not a massive fan
of
GSM.
Not at all.
Yeah. I remember watching him, you know, at Fiorentina and thinking that the makings of a really good player were there. He's never, I don't think, going to be a player that sets the entire world on fire. But on the whole, I think he's like a more than capable footballer who has just kind of always got a bit of stick for not, you know, for no real fair reason. And look, they are incredibly fun to watch. He scored 4 goals against Lazio last week. Then he scored 2 against Juventus this week. 2 starts, 6 goals. Not bad, eh? Against Lazio and Juve as well. Now, obviously, score 4 against the team that your dad basically maybe had his best years for as a player. There's always going to be that. And then after the Juve game, the first question he was asked was, are you continuing a family tradition of bullying Juventus? And he was like, can you stop talking about my dad?
I scored six goals
in a week. Can we maybe talk about the fact that I'm really good? But the second goal in particular gets out of his feet on the edge of the box and curls an absolute beauty home. Now, Juve are having a tough time again. We thought they might have turned a corner. They haven't turned a corner by the looks of things. It's been rough again from that kind of perspective. But Hellas, on the other hand, are flying, and I think just deserves some credit. And Gio Simeone in particular, that's just a remarkable turnaround. You know, 11 goal contributions from 10 Serie A games this season. And, you know, pretty much every game he started, bar one, he's managed to contribute with a goal or an assist in. And I think that's pretty remarkable. I think he's going to continue having a very, very good season over there. And there are going to be people looking at him and going, okay, 26 years old, on a bit of a hot streak here. Maybe we'll take a gamble. Because
it's a good time to hit form, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a great time to hit
January form. Window coming up. He's just ended Juve's chances of winning Serie A. 16 points behind now. I say that slightly tongue-in-cheek, but he might have.
It might well have done. I think the funniest bit about this maybe, and or maybe not funny, that's maybe the wrong word that I would use, is that Gio Simeone is on loan from Cagliari, who are rock bottom of Serie A. They've lent him out. They were like, oh, we don't need him anymore. We're fine. And now find themselves bottom of the league. Cagliari are going to be like, well, I mean, what's happened here? Like, this is a nightmare. That is not what anybody
maybe
wants to be looking at.
He's just having maybe he's just having a Pogrebniak moment. And for anyone that doesn't know what that means, he's a player that joined Fulham, scored, was it 4 or 5 games in a row?
5 games in a row,
Games in a row after joining, pretty much with his only 5 shots for Fulham. And people were like, oh my days, who is this player? If you watched an entire match he was playing, you'd have known that he wasn't actually that good. But on surface level, it looked like Fulham had signed a superstar. As it was, that was as good as it got. And yeah, it was all downhill from there. But maybe Simeone's just having his Pogrebniak moment. That's what I reckon.
I don't think so, mate. I think you actually look at his numbers throughout his career and they've just been pretty fine. Like when he's got starts, he's tend to have scored goals, and that's exactly where we are. So yeah, I think we'll give him some credit, I think, where it's due here. Gio Simeone, very, very, very impressive. And look, Serie A continues to be excellent. While the top two have pulled away, everyone from Roma in fourth are on 19 points. Okay. And then Udinese in 14th, they're on 11. There's 8 points between 7 places here. This is an absolutely massive gap. So, you know, we're looking at some really impressive stuff, and it's going to be really tight, I think, around the top 10 in particular, in terms of looking for that last Champions League spot, those Europa League spots. It's going to be really interesting. And even if the top two, and I think it will actually end up being the top three, pull away from the pack here, in Inter, Milan and Napoli, I think that it'll be really interesting to see that 4th spot, 5th spot, and how it pans out from there, especially with Juve in this rut once again. With that, I think probably time to move from Serie A to a former Serie A boss who's back in the Premier League. After the break, we're going to be talking about Antonio Conte, who is the new manager of Tottenham Hotspur. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Ranks FC podcast, where we're about to get into our main ranking. Now, Sam isn't with us, as you could probably tell, but we are going to talk about Tottenham and how things are going to play out under Antonio Conte. And to help us with that, we've brought in somewhat of an expert in the subject. We've brought in Mr. Nathan A. Clark from the Extra Inch podcast, Tottenham fan and a tactics guru. So, Nathan, thank you so much and welcome to Ranks.
Thank you. I'm not just Sam with the new look, for anyone who's confused.
it's one of those, just a quick switch, a quick substitution. But Nathan, It feels like a real moment, this, for Spurs. And we're going to look at the ways in which Conte needs to basically turn around this team. It's been a bit of a funny season. I think it's probably worth putting just the context of how things have gone under Nuno from a Spurs perspective in before we get into the change around.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, the thing with Nuno is that it always felt like it was going to be short term. It always seemed like he was going to be something of a bit of a glorified caretaker. You know, we obviously went through a series of options in the summer and then landed on him. And I feel my feeling at the time was that, like, we wanted sort of stability. We wanted to make sure that our next manager was, like, you know, the man. One of those wasn't available, so we brought in Nuno for the time being. And that went worse than we were expecting because, the fitness was improving and, sort of defensively things were coming on a bit, but there was just nothing on the ball at all. And you can't just coast through a season with, like, you know, 10 shots a game. It's just, there's nothing going on there. So we had to make that change and get the next, you know, serious coach in fast.
Yeah, I mean, this must be a pretty exciting time to be a Spurs fan in terms of not you know, the way that things are going to suddenly become incredibly expansive and exciting on the pitch. But you bring in Antonio Conte and you see exactly how things are have worked in the past. And suddenly you're going, right, we've got one of the top five managers in the world at the club. That is a massive coup at this point.
It's huge. It's huge. I think it is kind of expansive. It's like it's expansive when we have the ball. It's less expansive when we don't have the ball. Obviously, he's a bit old school. He's a bit of a disciplinarian. You know, he likes to shout and all those kind of things that you would associate with sort of yesterday's manager. But the football on the ball, all the patterns, all the drills, all the shaping, that's sort of really up to date with you know, the hipster's choice managers, I think.
Yeah.
Right then, let's get into this five. It's going to be five ways that Conte needs to turn around Tottenham, and you're going to rank them for us, and we'll work through them 5-1, and yeah, see where we go from there.
5-1. Okay. Right. So number five is exit calmly. Right. So it's a weird place to start, but basically, obviously, Conte, everywhere he goes, basically he wins. The football's incredible. They blow teams away. 2 years later, everyone's sick of him. He's trying to push for double the budget he spent last summer. All the players have been running the same high-intensity drills over and over again, and things don't end that well. And so what we want to make sure happens is that for everything Conte is going to bring in, which is what we're going to talk about in a minute, we need to make sure that he doesn't cause like damage on the way out. Yeah.
Absolutely blow everything apart. I mean, you're right. We've seen it before. It's a weird place to start. I agree, but it does make sense because I guess what you're looking at in Conte, not necessarily short-termism in terms of how Nuno was perceived, for example, but short-termism in that it's not someone that you think is going to be in charge of the club for the next 5 years.
He's not building a long-term project, right? This isn't about, I mean, a lot of the implication about what Daniel Levy's been talking about last summer was like, not saying Pochettino, but implying the next Pochettino with his choice of words. And this is not that. This isn't like building something that's going to last a long time. This is just a really good coach who's available now to come in and get us playing good football.
Yeah, I mean, look, ultimately, not many managers are getting longer than two seasons, you know, whether it's Tottenham or elsewhere. Sure. I mean, you look at Tottenham, like, you know, Mourinho didn't get to 2 years. You know, Pochettino obviously got five seasons, but that's rare. Sherwood got a season. VS Boas got about a season. Redknapp got longer. But Ramos, he didn't. So it's not that bad a thing if it's 2 years and you've managed to have some glory during that 2 years, but it also ends in an unhappy divorce, then so be it. I mean, most managerial appointments don't end well anyway, no matter what. So, you know, whether it ends up being a club legend or whether it's somebody with no ties to the club. So I don't think it really matters. I think this is all about changing the mentality of the club, isn't it?
Sure. I mean, the only thing, according to reports out, is that he has... in order to land the job, we've had to hand over a lot of power, a lot of control over transfers. So it's about having any budget left for, you know, the summer after he goes and the summer after that.
Yeah, Levy's had to do that, hasn't he? Because let's face it, Nuno was a cheap option. He thought he'd found a way to get out of paying off Mourinho and getting in a new boss on the cheap, and thought he'd you know, get longer than he did, longer than 4 months out of it. But ultimately, he's had another payoff, and he's just had to accept that, you know, the budget's gone for a little bit, and they're going to have to dig deep beyond now. But that's a fair point. You know, let's hope that it's not too bad a fallout at the end.
There's that element as well of that he's worked with Paratici before, right? And so I suppose there is, yes, the handover of power in that regard, Nathan. But if there is that relationship between them, and look, I'm not here to say that their relationship is good, bad or indifferent at the moment, because it's been a long time since they worked together. But the fact that they know each other, and there must be some sort of rapport, you'd hope, in how things are going to pan out here, is probably a good thing in terms of looking more long term and going, okay, yes, you have a budget, yes, you have more power in terms of transfers than managers before you have had, but you're also working within the constraints of someone that you vaguely respect, you'd imagine.
Well, it's funny that he left Juve when he was working with Beppe Marotta and Paratici, and did this big thing where he complained about, like, you can't go to a $100 restaurant with $10 in your pocket or whatever. And then since then, he's worked directly with Beppe Marotta at Inter, and now he's going to work directly with Paratici at Spurs. So, I mean, I guess there's some room for repairing things there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, what's in at number four?
Number four is, so I wrote down Harry Kane's name here, but I'm rephrasing it to excite the star players, right? It's not just Harry Kane. And I think the Harry Kane situation is slightly overblown with how, you know, desperate he is to run away. Of course, he wanted the City move in the summer, but I think, as you know, a childhood Spurs fan, he's not going to be like devastated that he didn't get the move.
Arsenal fan, mate, Arsenal fan.
I think the idea that he's like throwing his toys at the pram and he isn't trying this season is not reality. He's not getting the ball. He hasn't been getting the ball under Nuno. He wasn't getting it that much towards the end under Mourinho. So, but it isn't just Kane, because it's also Son. It's also players we're going to talk about in a minute. In the next one, it's kind of Lloris, although Lloris is obviously getting towards his decline, but it's sending that message, and it's kind of achieved by him arriving, right? It's sending the message to the players that we aren't just going to mess you about. You know, we're respecting the talent that's at the club and going to make actual use of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. And I think on top of that as well, you've got to look at ways that this squad is transformed to satisfy the star names that you've got. And I think that, you know, they looked at potentially getting an additional forward in the summer and they couldn't get it done. But they're going to look back down at Avenue. I wrote a piece for Eurosport on Tuesday, and Lautaro Martinez is going to be back on the radar before you know it. I know, like, he's just signed a new contract to Inter, but that is literally just to maintain his value in the market. I'm not saying it's going to be in January, but it could be. And if it's not, they'll go back in for him in the summer. They'll look at other options as well in terms of, you know, just supporting Kane, showing some ambition and building. Conte will want a better squad than he's got. He'll want, not just in terms of talent, but in terms of enthusiasm and in terms of endeavour. I mean, if somebody like Dele Alli, for example, has had big problems with Mourinho and Nuno, and the reports of a lot of it are to do with work ethic, attitude. And I mean, if you haven't got those two traits under Antonio Conte, you're in big trouble. Now, I'm expecting that Dele does show different traits, and he'll probably be quite scared, to be honest. If he starts to be a bit slack in training, then he'll soon get a rocket out of him and know where he stands. But you're right. I think exciting the star names at the club is something that needs to happen. I don't think that was there under Nuno. It wasn't even there under Jose, to be honest, was it? You know, at first, I think they thought he could get a tune out of them, and quickly the mask slipped and that was that. But I think if I'm excited as someone who's got absolutely no attachment to Spurs, then the likes of Harry Kane should certainly be excited about what might be possible.
I'm not worried about Dele. I'm not worried about other players who are perceived as lazy. I mean, obviously I can't tell you what goes on in training, but on the pitch, Dele is a fiery character. And he can be fired up.
Sure.
He was fired up under Pochettino. And I think that Conte will like that in him. And even since then, all of the time that he has been a maligned player, Dele's defensive output, the distance he covers and all of that has been fantastic throughout. So I think the idea that he is a lazy player is pretty dramatically overstated.
Yeah, agreed. Very much agreed, in fact. And I think there's something here that's interesting, in that exciting the star players goes two ways, right? One, it's being in communicative, and we've read all these reports obviously today about the fact that Nuno is quite a kind of icy character, not in a disrespectful way, but just in a quite likes things to be calm before he addresses any issues. Doesn't want it to be too emotional. Conte is almost the exact opposite of that. And whether that's a good or a bad thing is kind of up for debate in many ways, because there are obviously ups and downs to addressing everything when you're in a fiery mood. But I suppose half of it is kind of on the training field and that, and half of it is, as you say, given the fact that he is going to have more power in this transfer market, making moves that make the other star players look up and go, okay, yeah, that's a player that I want to play with. That's someone that can come in and improve this squad. And that's a massive part of this as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, it is. But look, there's also a dangerous side to all this, which we have to kind of be aware of. And that is that Conte is ruthless and he doesn't care. Think back to Diego Costa being dumped by text message at Chelsea. Like, if that's Diego Costa and that's how you're treated when he feels that you're not part of his plans, then that could be anyone. That could be Harry Kane if he doesn't want to get on side with what he's doing. Like, I'm not saying it will be at all, but he doesn't care about what your reputation is in the game or what your standing is at a football club. If he's decided that you don't fit in with his vision, then he'll let you go, even if it means that the resulting of that is that he goes about 6 months later. Like, he doesn't care. He'll do things his way.
Yeah, absolutely. What's in at number three then, Nathan?
Number three is So I didn't mention these players in the last one, but basically Get and Ndombele and Lo Celso run in the midfield. So, I mean, there's a long chronology here. Moussa Dembélé used to run the midfield. He became unfit. We went through a long period of time where midfield was a big issue. We ran a Winks and Sissoko midfield under Pochettino. It was terrible. Eventually, we brought Højbjerg in, but we're still running him alongside Winks and Sissoko. We brought Bayern Ndombele. Great, but he is injured for his first year. Mourinho is not that keen on him. Eventually, he brings him in. He plays him as a number 10. Towards the end, he gets to play in midfield. Things are a little improved there, but then things fall apart. I think unrelated, under Mourinho, will become this really, really limited counter-attacking team who can't get out their own half almost all of the game. So, and now we've got Nuno. And again, a kind of similar thing happens. He played a couple of games in midfield. Things looked really exciting. We were moving the ball well, solving the problems we had under Nuno. Then he starts playing him as a number 10 again. And like, he can play that role, but he's not solving our big problem. So it's kind of make or break. And it's not a completely dissimilar situation with Lo Celso. At least one of them, like, you can't run, you know, a title contending, we're talking about Conte here, a title contending midfield with like, players who are like a decent on the ball but are primarily ball winners. You've got to get some, you've got to get a playmaker in there. It's got to be Ndombele and or Lo Celso. So that is a big thing.
Can they play together? This is the big question. And look, I've always kind of favored the idea that a midfield trio of Højbjerg, Ndombele and Lo Celso would actually be quite a nicely balanced trio. But there's also this kind of overwhelming response I've always got when I've spoke about this from Spurs fans who say that Lo Celso is just not good enough. And look, I'm a Betis fan. I love Gio Lo Celso to the cows come home. But there is a sense that every time his name is mentioned, there's about, you know, a significant proportion of the Spurs fan base that just not good enough.
It's been a frustrating one. I did a video recently looking at his performances for Spurs versus his performances from Argentina. And a lot of it, I think, comes from he always wants to play the ball the way he's facing. Yeah. And so when he's playing under Nuno, when he's playing under Mourinho, a lot of the time he receives the ball from a centre-back, he plays back to the centre-back. Great, we're not getting anywhere. You look at how he plays for Argentina, you've got other playmakers. You've got Rodrigo de Paul, you've got Messi, you've got lots and lots of the ball. You've got opportunities and space. He keeps moving to the touchline to receive. When he receives the ball, he can see the whole game. So I think a better coaching setup, or what you see under Conte, which is, you know what you're going to do before you do it, right? You've rehearsed the next move. That's going to really suit him. Yeah, I think they can play together. They do need, obviously, a third, more defensively, you know, an anchor player behind them with that Højbjerg or Skip. I think that is an attractive option for Conte. You've also got Dele, who can be that sort of late arriver in the box from a midfield position. So I definitely wouldn't be shocked to see those two together in the midfield, just not alone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose with wing backs and three behind them as well, life is a little bit less, you know, chaotic in terms of defensive recovery, in terms of having the ability to kind of step up and make those things happen. And if there is kind of a Reguilón coming inside and delivering, and if Lo Celso does take that left-hand side role as his own, as I'd imagine he probably would, there is that space to expand a little bit further as he does for Argentina, as you say.
I think that's it. I mean, it's kind of make or break.
This is it, isn't it? It's this 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I adore both these players. A lot of Spurs fans are so frustrated with them. And as much as I am confident in the ability right now that at least one of them is going to really shine over the next year or so, if they don't, I have to accept defeat, I think.
Fair.
If there's a couple of other players to come in here, and how, you know, how this kind of midfield reinvents itself is quite interesting, because obviously we've seen Conte play a variety of systems here. We've seen him obviously play that 3-5-2 at Inter to great success. We saw him play more of a 3-4-3 at Chelsea. How do you see this side best equipped in that regard, especially in regards to these two? Is it that midfield three that allows these two to develop behind a Kane and Son? Or is there a kind of 3-4-3 here that allows more of a forward line to develop with the likes of Lucas Moura or Stevie Bergwijn or whoever that might be? Is that how you see it going forward? Or is it a 3-5-2 that you think we'll see straight away?
I'm leaning towards a 3-5-2. But I think that with the likes of Lo Celso and Dele, even whoever is going to be that sort of third man, they're both positionally versatile and flexible. So he's got options to experiment with how he wants. And I think the idea of having the front two of Kane and Son is going to be quite attractive. He's also played a bit of 4-4-2 in his time, or what he calls a 4-2-4. So maybe we'll see him play around with that. He likes to do that when he arrives first at a club. Tried the 4-2-4 and then revert to the back three. And I think that, like, yeah, centre backs, if we want to play three of them at a time, we want another one in January for sure.
Someone to play on the left of that three, I think, is probably the immediate concern. Okay, cool. Let's go on to the next one, Nathan.
Number two, nice and simple for Conte, I think, improve fitness. So obviously you have, going back to Pochettino again, a high-pressing, high-energy, high-demanding style of football and younger players, and that's great. But then 5 years on, those players have got older. There's not been much refreshing the squads. Players are bored of Pochettino personally, and so those fitness levels are really falling through. In comes Mourinho, who is sort of a bit old school with how he does things. And although you're not being pushed towards your limits quite as much and you're fresher, you can maybe play twice a week, your ceiling of fitness is lower, and you're getting in less sprints in a game, basically, which, yeah, when you've got a packed schedule and everything that happened with the virus is like useful for playing twice a week. But if we want to get back up to a high level of football and a high level of fitness, we want those sort of more rotation. Like Conte is noted for subbing off his wing backs regularly in games because of the amount of work he asks for them. So I think this is natural and easy. And I do think that it was beginning to trend in the right way under Nuno. He got a lot of criticism for the total distance covered stuff. But I think that is partly his style of play and partly just the low level of fitness that we were starting from.
I mean, he did this at Chelsea, Dean, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, I mean, this is just part and parcel of life, isn't it? I mean, let's not forget, like, when Mourinho first came into Tottenham, like, there were certain issues he had with fitness. And I remember when there was, you know, was it in lockdown, wasn't it, when he was with Ndombele in a park somewhere, like, doing shuttle runs or whatever he was doing. There was a few others involved in that. Not sure Conte is going to be caught with anyone in a park, because he won't need to be, but... You know, it's just a key element, isn't it, of becoming part of his team and being accepted in it. And it's something which he'll make sure they get right. Short term, I think it's difficult to implement because, you know, you're coming towards a spell now, like the run up towards Christmas. It's got to be careful. Like, we've read a lot about Conte and how he doesn't like to take charge of teams mid-season. And you'd imagine a lot of that's to do with the fact that he likes the pre-season because of how fit he gets his team. Now coming in November, ahead of the busiest time of a football season, it's a different challenge for him, for sure. And he's going to probably have to approach it slightly differently to how he normally would.
Yeah. It is a difficult one. And you can see why he's reluctant to take over teams. I think we're early enough in the season. Like, it's not January.
Yeah.
That things can trend in the right way. And maybe it might take a little while to get up to the pace that he wants. And he's going to have to try to do that, balance that while we're playing a lot of football, because we're playing Conference League and two domestic cups.
Yeah.
Two domestic cups still?
Just about.
So yeah, a lot of football. It's going to be difficult, but I don't think it's beyond him for sure.
I think you mentioned there, Nathan, the rotation, and there's maybe an important point here that there was, you know, I've been reading about things this morning, and there's this kind of sense that with Nuno, you're either in or you're out, right? You were part of the first team set up, or you were kind of part of this sort of quasi B team that were able to play in other games. And I suppose with Conte and with the amount of work rate and the fact that there are going to be ups and downs in terms of injuries, if you ask players to work this hard, you're going to have players who are willing to rotate into the system and do their best. And I suppose for a lot of players, and especially, you know, for these wing backs who are about to go through a big change, you'd imagine, with what's going on here. And the likes of someone, for example, like Ryan Sessegnon or Matt Doherty, who haven't really featured, obviously there's a vested Ryan Sessegnon interest here from both the Dean and I, but on the whole, you know, you've seen players not really featuring, and not sure that Sess is really a wing back at the best of times. But if he is going to feature as part of this system, you're looking at him and going, right, okay, there's opportunities here for players who might have been not necessarily in the dark or cast out, but players who just weren't being able to break through the kind of glass ceiling from Nuno. It's going to be massively important for those players to be rehabilitated into this rotation.
I mean, Sessegnon and Doherty as players who like to sort of, from wing-back positions, be goal threats is a stylistic perfect match. For Doherty, the downside is his sort of defensive game, his general sluggishness, his lack of comfort on the ball, that kind of stuff. Sessegnon, I think, is more of a situation of confidence. And if that confidence isn't coming from him, but Conte can lend it to him, Conte can light a fire under him and give him some character and some self-belief and some trust, subbing him on 15, 20 minutes at the end of the game to be the second choice wing back and maybe grab himself a goal because he likes goals from his wing backs. I think that could be a really, really good combination. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Which leaves us with one big one left to go, Nick.
So this is important, but it is also very easy for Conte, which is structure our possession. This is how we played before, again, going back to Pochettino, and then under Mourinho and under Nuno, it's much more the players sort of making it up as they go along. Daniel Levy, again, talked in the summer about playing attacking, free-flowing Spurs DNA football, which I believe that he means, but I don't know if he knows what that means, right? So much is talked about sort of individual freedom, and freedom is what we saw right under Mourinho, but it's hard to invent up on the fly, you know, 50, 80, 100 goals a season against set defenses. Conte, he decides how exactly every pass is going to be played, and it's run through the players again and again in sessions, coning drills, patterns over and over again, and I think that's perfect for us. I think that we'll be working the ball through midfield. Maybe Ndombele is the one player who gets a bit of license to invent around outside of that because of his abilities. But having structure, having organisation to what we want to do on the ball and how we want to do it, we're going to see the ball at Kane's feet a lot. We're going to see Son through on goal a lot. And I think that is a guaranteed way to score a lot of goals. Bring wins to us, bring a much, much better feeling around the club, get the best out of individual players. It's what we've been screaming out for a long time.
It ties in nicely with what you were saying before, though, as well, Nathan, in that, you know, you're looking at players here, and especially in the midfield, who have lacked imagination, right? And with this system and with Conte coming in, they don't necessarily need that imagination. They need to do what they've been structured to do week in, week out in training. And it kind of takes that creative burden, not necessarily off them in terms of you can't create, but it takes the burden off you have to invent everything on the spot, as you say. And that's a really important thing because, you know, there are obviously certain players who love that responsibility. You're going to find there are players in the world who want that. They want to go, yeah, give me the ball and I'll make it all happen myself. You look at Memphis, you look at Neymar, those kind of players who just want to be given the freedom to do what they like. Most players on the whole would be like, okay, I'd like to have the ability to sometimes think on the spot, but also if there isn't anything on, I can revert to something that I know and trust and therefore can continue to make things work without necessarily having to create everything by myself every time we get the ball.
So again, this is kind of the thing with both Nuno and Mourinho, is that, like, okay, you aren't heavily organizing what we're going to do when we have the ball. You aren't using structural creativity, but you're also picking, like, defensively safe options for your midfielders as well. So those in combination across two managers has been like, you've got to have one. You've got to lean on one. You've got to lean either on the individual or you've got to lean on the structure. I think Conte will give us both at the same time, and that'll be quite something.
Is there a real sense, I suppose, and it comes into this, of excitement, not just because it's Conte and because of the way that, you know, we've brought in a serial winner, et cetera, but kind of just, it feels like over the last... especially over the last couple of months with Nuno, but even before that, the kind of fun had gone out of Spurs fans. And we were talking about different elements of different managers. And I was talking about Vieira with Dean on Monday's podcast. And we were saying, you know, the results haven't always been perfect, right? It's upsetting if you concede in the 93rd minute to your rivals at home. That's a deeply upsetting thing. But because Palace have been really fun to watch, fans are kind of just completely on board with the concept, even when things don't go their way. And there is that sense that Tottenham have lost that excitement of, oh, can I just avoid match day if possible? And this brings that back in. That's a massive bonus in terms of atmosphere, in terms of crowd, but also just in terms of feeling positive about your football club again.
I mean, as someone whose job is to watch, think, and talk about Spurs every day. It's been a hard couple of years. I'm not going to lie to you, man. I mean, like, it's, yeah, like you said, it's okay to lose, you know? It's okay to draw. It's okay to fall short of the result that you want. But you have to have that feeling that we're heading in a direction. Again, Conte isn't like a long-term direction kind of guy, but you know that, like, if he loses his first game, if he draws his second game, he's building a type of football. Like, the players are learning a style. They're learning the patterns. They're learning the combinations. They're learning the position and the role. Whereas under Nuno and Mourinho, it was just the same every week. There was no progression. There was no building towards something. It was just try to get through the next game. And so, yeah, if we lose three games on the bounce under Conte, we're still going to be excited for the match after that.
Yeah. So it's a massive bonus, a massive bonus. I mean, we've done similar at Fulham. We've had ups and downs, but obviously those years where you lose every game are incredibly sad to, you know, you have to come back on afterwards and talk about them. And I just don't want to. I don't want to do it. And it gets to that point where it starts to become a chore, not something that you look forward to. And that should never be the case with the football club. Nathan, I mean, I'm going to let you go in a second, but just before we do, what do you foresee as the rest of this season? Is it
more happiness?
I'm not suggesting that Spurs are going to go. That's a given. Spurs are going to come in and challenge for a Champions League place. And I'm not saying they can't. I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying, what would be the kind of, what's the, not expectation, but the feeling that what you could achieve now for the rest of this season?
I think Champions League spots are up for grabs. I think that the league's in a bit of a funky state at the moment. I think it's definitely doable. I think the squad absolutely has the capacity. I think Conte is an outstanding short-term coach. So Champions League this season, I think, is looking pretty tasty. And then depending on how much we spend over the next couple of windows, beyond that for the year after, yeah.
Absolutely.
That's the end of Conte's contract.
Yeah, then you'd be gone, right? That'd be that. And we just hope he goes away quietly at the exit door, as you said, as your first point. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure talking about Spurs and about Conte. And just let your listeners know where they can find you if they want to find out more.
So I'm on Twitter at Nathan A. Clark, and the podcast is at The Extra Inch.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure.
Buonasera.
Welcome back to the Ranks FC podcast, and thank you once again to Nathan for all his thoughts on Spurs and Conte. Dean, just before we move on to the usual closing suspects, I think it might be just nice to quickly get a handle on what's going on in terms of Spurs in the market. What have you heard so far?
Well, as part of Conte coming in, it's fair to say they've spoken about transfer plans and the kind of money that he might be given. My understanding is it will be about 150 million that he'll have to spend in the next year. That's what they're kind of putting out there as a general figure for where they could be heading. I think it makes sense that you'll see, I mean, it already started before he even came into the job, is that he's been linked with Serie A names. I mean, I just talked about Lautaro in the main part there, but there will be other people coming into that. Wouldn't be surprised to hear Vlahovic come back into there. Skriniar, people like that. They'll all be linked in the coming weeks. I mean, look, over the next week, you'll hear probably 20 names linked to Tottenham. And some of them will be bang on. Some of them will just be, punt in the dark, really. But ultimately, yeah, they are going to invest in the squad because they kind of have to as part of this investment. And like I said, Nuno was kind of a cheap option. They didn't really spend much money. They were hoping they could get by with the talent that was already there, and they couldn't. They've now got to really amp things up. And I think that, you know, it's a promising start. Like, even seeing images of Conte standing there with a Tottenham shirt, it's mad. Like, it's mad. Just that in its own will give everybody attached to the club a lift. So, you know, the players will be more excited. The board will now have a new excitement about him, a new verve. And Joe Lewis, who, you know, is the billionaire basically behind Tottenham, is willing to put his hand into his pocket as part of this with Daniel Levy and make sure that they don't get left behind, because this has been a big warning for them, like how quickly you can fall off a cliff, you know, to go in from a side that got to a Champions League final to where they are today is pretty crazy. But it just goes to show, like, a year, so much can happen in a year. And from losing Pochettino and potentially losing Harry Kane and changing manager and, the, you know, the fallout from Mourinho, like the whole place was just rattled. And now they need to retain some composure, get themselves and go again. And that means in the market as well as in the dugout.
Okay. Well, we'll be returning, I imagine, closer to the time as things start to heat up in terms of their transfer business, their transfer activity. It's still very early.
Let me dig in a little bit before we get to Jan. Yeah.
Well, it's the start of November, so you can't imagine that much is going to be moving just yet, but there are
obviously the agents are already at work. Don't you worry about that.
Oh, absolutely no doubt whatsoever. All right then, mate. It's time for my favourite part of the week.
It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is Gremio supporters. Now, that's quite a large...
That's a lot of melons. Yeah, how much money have you got in the tank for sending melons
of the week? I don't have all their names, unfortunately, this bunch, but they are a bunch of melons. So what happened was that the players from Gremio were forced to take refuge in the dressing room on Sunday after their fans stormed the pitch after a 3-1 defeat to Palmeiras. They invaded the pitch. They smashed up the VAR system after a goal was controversially ruled out that would have brought them level, would have made it 2-2, but they didn't count. It was ruled out for offside, and then they conceded a third goal in stoppage time. The fans went absolutely mental about this. As I say, they smashed up the VAR system. They smashed up the pitch side interview stuff. They took photographers' cameras and smashed them up. Riot police had to come onto the scene. It looks like Gremio are going to get a 10-match stadium closure. They're going to be hit with a massive fine, like millions potentially. It's really ridiculous. It's totally melonish behaviour from grown men who really should know better.
Yeah, there was a lot, wasn't it? I think this is my take on the matter was it was a lot.
We've all wanted to smash up a VAR screen, but no one's done it. This lot have.
Well, they have now. Yeah, like they have now. They've taken it to the extreme. But look, that's what football does to you, mate. It does funny things
to
people.
Yeah, it does do funny things. Yeah. I don't know if I should say it's funny, but it is a little bit funny.
It's mad scenes. You do feel for the players a little bit, but like also it's just like one of those where everything is just being turned over and you're like, oh God, there's lots going on here.
Not sure what difference it makes smashing up the VAR equipment, but there you go.
Okay. Yeah, indeed. All right.
Wow, that was a
gibberish
long one.
Alarm.
Yeah. Okay, so yet again, I'm on duty because Sam's not here again. And even when he is here...
Sick note ties back.
Yeah, sick note. And even when he is here, he doesn't do gibberish. I mean, it's basically part of my full-time job now, so I need a pay rise. This week, things I hate about autumn. Okay.
Oh, it's a classic. This is a revival.
It is a classic, yeah. We need to revisit it. Haven't done it since the old days. I think there might be two new ones on here. We'll see. Number three.
I caveat this at the beginning with autumn is probably my favourite season. I love autumn.
Rubbish, man.
Like, I love the fact that, like, it's cold and bright. Like, my favourite
combination
of
things... No, that's not a good thing. You'd never know what to wear.
My favourite combination of things is a big coat and sunglasses. That's when I'm happiest.
We had this debate yesterday when we were walking into live score or out of live score, that you just don't know how to dress. Like, I had my big coat on yesterday. I wasn't sure if I needed it. And if I hadn't needed it, it would have been a pain carrying that around all day. So that isn't actually in my top three, but I should have been. The thing I hate, number three, is the Christmas build-up's begun. So here we are. It even begun before November, to be honest. I saw when I got back from America, like August the 12th, whatever it was, October the 12th, I went into a garden centre near me. All the Christmas stuff's there, everything. Half the shop's been taken over by Christmas. Like, it's 2.5 months away. 2.5 months. And here we go, like everyone revving up, being told to panic buy basically because all the toys are going to run out. There's going to be delivery shortages of drivers. So everyone's sought to buy their Christmas present. It's one day. It's one day and there's a 2-month panic up before it even arrives. It was supposed to enjoy this day. And I do generally enjoy Christmas. I do like Christmas Day. It's a lovely family day. But do we need 2 months build up to it that starts in autumn and overshadows what would be a much better season if Christmas wasn't coming? Like, everyone talks about how much they love autumn. Yeah, all they talk about, the whole thing is built around this day in winter. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I actually completely agree with this point, which is not what I expected when you said that you were gonna hate on my season. But I completely agree. I don't think you should be playing Christmas music before December 1. I think that you should be able to, you know, to really dial in. Winter for me is December, January, February. They're the three winter months, right? Spring sort of starts end of Feb. There's a little bit of crossover. But on the whole, autumn is, you know, this kind of golden season where the leaves are falling down and everything's turning colours and everything happens. And look, I'm not massive on Halloween, but I love fireworks night. Fireworks night's my favourite. So I love this kind of point of the year, but it really winds me up when I walk into a shop and I'm listening to Rocking Around the Christmas Tree and it's October 30th. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, we haven't even had Halloween yet. We haven't had fireworks night yet. You know, this is all for December. Give December its due, right? December is great because you get all of this, you get the build up to Christmas, everyone's having a good time. It's all very Christmassy, everyone's having a nice time. But I don't need that in November, and I definitely don't need it in October. Like, you know, we're in a different bit of the year here. Stops you from giving the real due to the real season. You know, this is about like nice flavors, nice colors. Everyone's having a good time in autumn, as long as it's not Christmas, and that is frustrating.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Right, at number two, it's spiders and their webs. So this is a leftover from summer, and I have got so many spider webs around the outside of my house. It is absolutely ridiculous. One of them has been camped out for the last 2 months. I could have killed him by now, but
you should have charged him rent.
I may. He's living rent free.
Literally in your noggin.
It is winding me up. So we have these like doors leading out into the garden, and this web, it's got to be 2 or 3 foot long, right? And it's constantly there. Even if I get the ump with it one day and I get the broom and chop a couple of the edges off so that he falls back down into the olive tree where he clearly has come from, it's back up the next day. I wake up the next morning, this huge web is back there attached to the patio doors. And I'm like, oh, mate. As I say, I could kill him, but I haven't brought myself to go that far with it because I'm not sure he deserves it. The other confusion I have is, I don't know if you've ever, how closely you look at spiders, but there's this one called the Noble False Widow that has like a skull, a picture of a skull on its back. It's like pretty scary. It's like Sons of Anarchy stuff. And I'm like, this is weird. And that kind of scares me. And the garden spider, which is what is living all around my house, it turns out, because I've had to do some research just to see whether these things can bite the kids. The garden spider actually is fine, hence why he's still alive, but it has this really, really weird, like, cross on its back. It's like RIP. It's like, mate, chill out. Like, I wouldn't mind you so much if you didn't have this really intimidating cross on your back. So, spiders and their webs is really annoying, and especially the playground set that the kids have got in the garden, every day the spider webs are back. And I forget, like most days forget, that they're going to be in these certain places, and you walk through one and a spider web ends up in your face or in your hair. That winds me up. So, yeah, spiders and their webs, another thing that is ruining autumn.
No, I like spiders. I like spiders because, like, you see little spiders in your house, and I know that they're eating all the other like flies and stuff. I've got a lot. They're looking after me. They're eating the mosquitoes. They're making sure. At the moment, I've got a ladybird infestation.
Oh dear!
Which sounds well. It's ups and downs, right? It's probably better than having any other type of infestation because ladybirds are quite nice and they're like pretty harmless. But they also. They basically, when ladybirds get comfortable, they release a pheromone which invites other ladybirds to the party. So basically, every time I get rid of like 10 ladybirds, like another 10 turn up the next day. So it's not ideal, but to be honest, if there was going to be any creature that wanted to infest the flat, like ladybirds are pretty pleasant.
I don't know. Nice I reckon you could make a pretty weird like horror movie out of ladybirds because of that exact reason. You think you're not scared of them. But I reckon, like, there's some dark side to ladybirds.
Nah, they're well nice. But they keep inviting their mates over. It's basically like having a house party, right? And someone you don't really know turns up, and then they just keep texting their mates, being like, "Well, good house party here." And you're like, no. Like, you're a bit harmless. I'm not worried about you being here, but like, you can't just keep bringing your mate. Like, it's not fair.
Yeah, maybe.
That's basically the equivalent. But on the whole, spiders tend to like keep out the other bugs, right? Which is why they do.
And that, one of the reasons
around.
Again that this spider's still alive. And he has been alive a long time now. It's because the kids actually like looking at him because he's right up against the window and like a lot of light comes in. So you can see really clearly the web and the spider and the flies that are getting caught. And it's mad the way that they wrap up the flies or whatever they've caught. Yeah. And they like literally almost like mummify them. They wrap them up. And then they munch them. You'll go along later on and they'll have one and they'll be like eating it. And obviously it takes like about a week to eat a fly. But just watching the process, it's pretty interesting, to be fair.
It's a bit like having a David Attenborough documentary on your doorstep.
Yeah, I mean, cool. Hit me up in the DMs. Should I kill the spider or not?
No, don't kill the spider. I'm with you in that if there was a spider with a like scary cross on its back, I'd be like, whoa.
Mate, that false widow with the skull on its back is weird. It's very weird.
I'm a bit out. Anyway, what's number one?
We know what number one is.
It's the leaves.
The leaves and how slippery they get. I moved house, obviously.
Leaves.
In lockdown, I moved house. And it was in preparation for fall. We moved at the end of the summer, last summer, and it's because I couldn't stand, it's not because of this, but we did have a lot of trees in where I used to live. And it was like we had a path that leads down to the side entry to our house where the door was. And it was a nightmare when it rained. And it does rain all the time in October and November. And it was so dangerous with how slippery those leaves become, those stupid yellow leaves. And, you know, having kids, you have to think about these things. Like, it's bad enough if I fall. Nobody wants that. But if a small kid falls, then it's just leading to a lot of crying and potentially a trip to A&E. So nobody needs that. I'm happy, very happy that the road I now live down, apart from in the back garden, there's no leaves out the front because there's no trees outside anyone's houses. It's all just driveways and stuff. And that is good news. The only person that did have a tree cut it down about 2 months ago. And while I'm not usually a fan of seeing trees cut down because it's pretty bleak in these times to see stuff like that happen, but I was delighted, to be honest, because I was like, well, that's some less leaves that's going to cause me a problem in a couple of months. I'm getting to that age now, Jack, where things like this can have a serious impact on my mental well-being. I spend a lot of time indoors, as you know. I don't go out as much as I used to. So you look out the window and you're watching these things and studying them. And the less leaves there are on the road, I know there's less chance of getting hurt, less chance of me being depressed and bothered and hurt. And that leads to a happier me. So wet leaves are the bane of autumn. But the only good thing about this is so far this autumn, I haven't been affected by them. Apart from, actually, that's not true, is it? That path that leads to Live Score, that's going to get me. That path to Live Score that comes out of the park into the entrance, that's going to get me.
Yeah, no, it's a scary. I mean, you're going to have to start taking the main road again.
So I am going to start going the other route down the main road to avoid the trees. It takes about 5 minutes longer, doesn't it?
Yeah, Sam and I are going to be taking the shortcut if Sam ever comes back to work. And then you're going to be walking around the long way on your own to avoid the leaves. It's all right, mate. We'll get you a little stick, or I can give you my arm and you can steady through it. Make sure that you don't fall over. You are at that age.
Me
now,
and Ebro.
Exactly. Well, very good, very good. I mean, I disagree with you on the whole, but you've given some good reasonings there, so I'll accept it. I will remain though steadfast in my belief that autumn is the glorious season.
Enjoy it.
Love
it. You enjoy it, mate. Enjoy the next month.
How long's left?
When does it end?
Well, pretty much end of November, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got 3 weeks left. Winter.
You've got 3 weeks left or so, yeah. Sort of, we're just starting to get into those two. Autumn and spring for me. Mm. Winter then, and then summer last, because I hate the heat. But, you know, I feel like I am a little bit of an anomaly in that regard. Absolutely. Right, with that, I think it's probably time to call this a day and all that's left for me to do. So thank you very much to Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much to Nathan Clark, who joined us to talk about Conte and Spurs. Make sure you go out and check out his podcast, The Extra Inch, if you want more Spurs content. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening, as ever. We'll see you next week, gang. Take it easy. piece